The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, Nerdapalooza, the world's largest nerd music festival, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Hi, this is Simon Strange. I'm the head of Sunstone Games, makers of Kaiju Combat, and you are listening to The Nerdy Show.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hi, I'm Hex.
Hey, I'm Doug.
I'm Kristen.
I'm John.
And you're listening to a Nerdy Show Microsode, a show featuring a topic that you have picked out. We're a listener-supported podcast, and every time you guys push us over $100 mark in our monthly support drive, you choose what we talk about. And this time around, Big Bad Shadow Man has asked us to talk about great rivalries.
Ooh.
He says, two beings that are iconic for doing battle with one another, i.e. Batman and the Joker, Optimus Prime, and Megatron.
Well, he said my two ideas, so I'm just going to go.
Well, the episode's over, guys.
Do-do-do-do-do-do. Really, Micro?
I was like, well, I was compiling a list. There's a few we can knock off right away, just because everyone knows them. There's nothing more we can really say about them that hasn't already been said. Obviously, Batman and the Joker.
Yeah, Megatron and...
Optimus Prime. Dude. Superman, Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four and Doctor Doom.
Yeah, Doctor Doom's awesome, though. He transcends them. But anyways, go ahead.
Captain America and Red Skull.
Yeah.
I mean, they were designed to be, you know, anti each other.
Which is true of most comic book villains. Ones that originated in the 1960s. They have a lot of added complexity to them, and certainly Marvel villains always have a certain human element to them and sort of a tragedy, just something that DC appears to never understand. But
you went there.
I'm just saying that they got a Villains Month coming up, and there was an editorial mandate that there not be any sympathetic moments with those villains.
Cyborg Superman is in it. Cyborg Superman.
It's not a bad thing. Geoff Johns wrote him really well.
Yeah, and then he killed him.
Oh, yeah.
He is dead.
I don't know.
Anyway, sounds like a bad idea. Anyway,
obviously, Superman's greatest rivalry, Doug, is Cyborg Superman. I mean, Cyborg Superman, Doug.
See, there, I got a fight with you. The best Superman villain is Bizarro.
Yeah, like, Bizarro is more anti-Superman than Cyborg Superman. Mario and Bowser.
Yeah.
Right.
So, Link and Ganon.
Dorf. Sonic and Robotnik.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, there's some... Every classic game or every classic comic book, you know, you just know it. Like, you know the hero, you know the villain.
What about some literary stuff like Ahab and Moby Dick?
Yeah, that was one. I got Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, massive.
That's kind of like so much is spawned from those two. Mm-hmm.
Bond and Blofeld, even in the books with against Smirsch. That was clearly something out of the books. Oh, Dracula. And Van Helsing.
Ooh, nice one.
And not like just the movie version, but straight up like Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, from movie version.
Yeah, that one was just like, dude, they were destined to fight. Like, it's totally different.
Yes.
Another one I like from literature, but also in a lot of films, Captain Hook and Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Those guys are perfect for each other.
Right, they will fight for eternity.
Mm-hmm. I got a couple of the ones that are a little bit more obscure that I was going to save till later, but I'll run through them now so we can, if we want, we can talk about them. I got...
So you're inviting us to derail you then?
Yeah, yeah, okay. At any point. Seinfeld and Newman.
that was unexpected.
That's what I said. They were unexpected.
That's definitely like, yeah, that they will forever...
They'll never like each other, ever.
Never.
Ever.
Newman.
Captain James T. Kirk and Khan Noonan Singh, but, you know, original. Right. I'm not going with the new one because it's... We already talked about that.
They have no previously established relationship.
Yeah, exactly. You can't be, you know, it's like, I don't know you. I don't know you. Guess we're rivals.
So, want to get a drink after this? Sure.
That's the thing. With the original episode, that built the rivalry. And that's why that episode is freaking awesome.
Right.
Personal favorite, Indiana Jones and Belloc. Now,
Belosh.
Belosh. Yeah, it's like the Germans call him Belosh. But now
you know that's Hex, Belloc.
He was only in the one film, but I'm a nerd, of course, and I've read like some of the other books.
Yeah, they were straight up rivals. There was no.
Yeah,
no,
dude, have you read some of the other books?
Like, I'm aware of their relationship.
Oh,
and,
man,
and it's all in Raiders. Like you just see it. They are up in each other's business.
Yeah, yeah. In the comics and some of the novels, Belloc is such a dick, and it's been a great way that you'd love to hate him.
Also, if you read all the notes for the seasons of Young Indie Chronicles mm-hmm. that didn't happen, mm-hmm. man, he is that show was not great. But man, if they just got into season 3, holy shit!
Yeah, yeah. Another interesting tidbit about Belloc was that he also played Ivan Ooze in the Power Rangers film.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Whoa.
He was also Reverend Shooter in Hot Fuzz. Which, granted, wasn't the best rivalry for those two characters, but it had my favorite moment in the film. It was very, you know, it's like, stop this madness! Then, you know, fine, anyway.
Right.
Sarah Connor, John Connor versus Skynet. That's like,
that's a cross-generational.
And the thing about that is, like, it's
like
not,
Van Helsing.
Not only is it cross-generational, but the rivalry is equal on both sides. Where it's not like, well, one's just a robot, and John Connor, we don't care about him, we're robots. It's like, no, dude. Skynet fucking hates John Connor.
Skynet is sending people through the past
exactly.
to hunt him down. To
like
prevent his birth from ever happening.
Literally everything they got. It's trying to kill this child, and it's just not happening. So you can understand if the robot was emotional, it would be frustrated. Turtles and Shredder.
Yeah.
That's like, you know.
Traitor?
No.
Shut your whore mouth.
Before I shut it for you. One that I grew up really loving, Pee-wee Herman and Francis.
That's amazing.
Nice.
Yes. No, seriously. Like, I mean,
this is an unironic appraisal.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
a pretty good one.
I used to recite that their line exchange because the hatred was so thick in every scene that they had. I want to just start quoting it, but I'm going to restrain myself because I was just going to go into the whole thing. But just look it up on YouTube. The Pee-wee Herman Francis. Oh my god.
We'll link to it.
Yeah, I feel like that needs to be like a master class of like. Enemies, just like bitter enemies, but also it's somewhat innocent, but it's not like I can't define it. They broke the mold when they made that film. Oh my goodness. Anyway, came up more recently, Commander Shepard and the Reapers.
Oh
yeah,
because again, much like John Connor and Skynet, the Reapers at first, Reapers are like, oh, you're a human,
whatever,
you know, whatever. Yeah, then suddenly it's like,
we need to fucking
and it's just like, oh wait, now the Reapers are gunning for Shepard number one, you know. It's like, that's pretty badass, and it's all the more badass when you are Shepard and you can hate the Reapers as much as they hate you.
Yeah,
so I don't know, that's classic.
Here's a real life example. Mm-hmm. One that's made its way into popular culture, especially popular culture somehow related to a nerdy show, Tesla and Edison.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
like, and probably legendary. Edison and everybody else he pissed off.
Well, he was really good at that.
Well, also Tesla and Marconi.
Yeah.
But that's not as infamous. But yeah, Tesla Edison is boom.
Would you say similar vein of that, Dr. Light and Dr. Wiley?
Totally.
Definitely.
It is very much exactly that situation.
I mean, his name is Thomas Light. Thomas Edison invented, quote unquote.
Are you putting Tesla in Wiley's shoes? Is that what you're doing?
No, I'm just saying that was where the name came from. And Albert Wiley, the name came from Albert Einstein. That's what they looked at the first names of two famous inventors was where they got the idea.
I was about to fight.
It's like Nikola Wiley. It'd be like, holy shit, how do we not see this before?
Do companies count?
Corporations are people, friend.
You're
so,
right.
Pepsi Coke.
I'm not your friend, pal.
Okay.
I'm not your pal,
here's how
buddy.
Bad Pepsi Coke went, though. Coke actually detonated stars, a supernova, to make their logo in the sky to win the race forever.
What?
What is that from?
Don't remember the Red Dwarf books?
Yes, yes. I was like, I recognize that thing. Yes. Yeah, the Coke-Pepsi wars have made its way into fiction and had notorious consequences.
Oh, okay.
John, please explain.
What was it? Crichton ship, right? That was its purpose. Its mission was actually to go out and to detonate like these supernovas. I think, and they like, you know, got like lost and scuttled in space.
Yeah, that's it's been a long time since I read the Red Dwarf novel.
Yeah.
So that sounds right though. That sounds right. Yeah.
It's been a while.
And you know the Pepsi Coke rivalry is actually, I mean, man, early 1980s, late 70s,
It got dark. Coke has so much. This is a weird version of this conversation we're supposed to be having here. But Coke has so much prevalence now. Like, there's never a doubt that the alleged soda wars were ever going to, you know, end any other way. And Pepsi does seem kind of like the underdog.
Well, and it's also weird. Like, people have made this comment several times, but you can go to any village in the world. There will not be medicine. There will be Coca-Cola.
Late 70s, early 80s, Coke was losing. Yeah. Like, Pepsi was way over. And it was because of that whole taste test thing, the blind taste test. People initially liked Pepsi more because, I guess,
it was the taste of a new generation.
The going theory is, like, I don't know if this is bias on Coke's count, because I don't even fucking drink mass-produced sodas anymore. So, you know, I don't have an opinion on this, really. The idea is that Pepsi's sweeter than Coca-Cola Classic. So you really like that first sip of Pepsi. You drink the whole thing and you're like, oh, I didn't really care for that as much as I cared for, but whatever. Anyway, so that's where New Coke came from and all that whole, that's a whole thing I know way too much about.
The new
Coke scandal. Please, let's move on to something that's not this weird discussion.
So it's not real world.
Oh, so, man. Spider-Man.
I tried that Crystal Pepsi, but whatever.
Spider-Man and J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah, that's a good rivalry.
I was going to say Spider-Man and everybody, because, I mean, like, you, Venom, Green Goblin,
but the one villain
Doc
that he
Ock.
Can't just punch in the face.
Yeah, the one villain, and also, he enjoys having him as a rival. Like, he actually, he's just like, hey, JJ, what's going on? Get out of here, just damn Spider-Man! Like, it's very much, they love to hate each other.
Right.
Again, there's a little bit of innocence in there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a strong one. Man, he must, if Peter Parker still exists anywhere, he must be really fucking mad at Doc Ock right now. You want to, like, they are, if somehow, like, when next Spider-Man movie comes out or whatever, and they gotta, you know, make Peter Parker not dead, though he may actually stay dead, I don't know, then holy shit, he's gonna be mad at Doc Ock. It's just gonna be, that is gonna be the
wait
most
in the comics
rivalry.
Did he kill Jameson?
No, I'm in Peter Parker.
Right. No.
Oh, Doc Ock has first, he and Jameson were on the same side, and Jameson's like, wow, wall crawler, you're finally, like, you're speaking my language. You're beating up punks, and you're like, you're putting them within an inch of their life. I can really relate to that. That's great. I'm the mayor, and I endorse this Spider-Man, whatever. And then Doc Ock's like, hey, give me this prison you're decommissioning, this prison island. And he's like, what? No, why? Why would I do that? And he's like, because I have all this blackmail material on you. So you're going to do whatever I want. He's like, I knew it. You're a mess. but now J. Jonah Jameson, mayor of New York City, is the pawn of Doc Ock / Spider-Man, and he's rolling out with a crew of Spider minions. Yeah,
man. I was gonna say, because based on the films, like, the J.K. Simmons is in my mind, like, in every superhero movie, there's always someone who gets the part and they nail it.
Right.
And it's not always the hero. It could always be something else.
Definitely.
For Spider-Man, that person was J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson. And the thing that's
perfect.
Yeah, perfect is, like, I don't mean just like, oh, he was, like, you know, metaphorically he's perfect. It was, no, literally.
Literally.
Perfect. But the thing that I loved about the film was, like, even when he's like, oh, Spider-Man's a menace and he's terrible, blah, 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 and he's being funny or whatever, when Green Goblin blows the wall down, grabs J. Jonah by the throat, and he's like, who sends in the pictures of Spider-Man? He's like, I don't know, sends him into the mail. I don't know who he is. I'm like, dude, you got balls, JJ. Like, he may not like Spider-Man, but he's not going to.
He will not put
one of his employees at risk.
He is still
just to catch Spider-Man.
A journalist with integrity.
Yeah, surprisingly.
Right.
but it's true.
But it's because, like, through and through, he's a journalist. Like, mm-hmm. And that's what I love about Jameson, that he is a lovable villain.
Mm-hmm. He's not even, I wouldn't even say villain. He's just antagonist. He's a hurdle. He's an annoyance. But again, like, they're perfect for each other like that. They're also both, they work in the news. I don't know, it's great. Like, even with, like, Lex Luthor and Superman, it's not as fun. Like, it's good, it's important, and it needs to be there, and he's the number one for a reason, but it's lacking a certain,
well,
they don't love to hate each other. Like,
Cap had the nail on the head with DC doesn't fully get villains. They don't make them relatable. There isn't a reason for us to root for Lex Luthor.
Well, there is definitely a reason for us to root for Lex Luthor. I think here's the thing.
It depends on the version.
The problem is that most times people just don't write Superman well, and that goes for everybody associated with him. But the thing about Lex Luthor, the thing that makes him a really compelling character, and one of the most interesting and introspective characters in DC Comics, is that he is a genius.
Mm-hmm.
He's vain, but he's also
under the idea that he is out to protect humanity. Like, right. He believes...
They need to play up the opposite more of Luther, because, like, Superman was born with superpowers, and morally he's really, you know, good and just. He may not be a perfect genius. Lex Luthor is a genius, but he's also a self-made man.
Right. He believes, like, in human ingenuity and human power, and he will be damned if some creature from another world, like, comes in here and says that, you know, I'm going to protect you. He's like, no, humanity will protect itself. And then really, he says all these big sweeping arguments that are all in favor of humanity, and like, this guy needs to leave us alone and let us to our own devices. And then really, all those arguments just end up being about him and Superman,
right,
because
right.
he's so vain.
Right. That's the one line I loved in Superman Returns, where it's like, oh, Lex, you know, what do you think you're doing? You're not God. And he just gets angry, but not screaming, just, no. Gods are beings that fly around in little red tights and don't share their power with mankind. And I'm like, ooh, side of Lex that we haven't seen in the movie before. I want some more of that. And then, well, you know, the rest of the movie happened, and didn't quite dip into that as much as I'd like. But it's like, that's why it's frustrating, because there's so much, there's ripe ground there, but they don't go through with it.
Right.
And they kind of have done it to death with Batman and Joker. Like, I can't tell you the number of times they play up the whole, we're opposites, you and me, you know, we could have been the same and we're all different.
It's great the first time you hear it. And then,
yeah, it kind of blows your mind the first time. Like, holy shit, yeah. Like, he made him, but he made him. And then, oh man, what came first? You know, it's just every version has done it.
My favorite rivalries in Batman are the are the ones that are one-sided. Like, because there's Batman's like, yeah, whatever, yeah, whatever, yeah, whatever, I'm Batman, fuck you. Even with Joker, he's got it. There's a special twinkle in his eye for Joker, but it's still, he likes to think that it's, yeah, whatever, fuck you. But it's like guys like Bane, guys right. like Ra's al Ghul, like they're like, you are my all-time enemy,
right?
You are the guy that I have to, like,
they gun specifically for him.
Yeah, I have respect for you and I hate you,
right?
And I mean, with Ra's al Ghul, he's like this, you know, the ultimate Machiavellian, like, crime emperor, so you know his shit. But like with Bane, when Bane is well written, which is seldom, you know, he's this romantic tortured beast of a guy who really kind of can't help himself in a lot of ways. Like, he gets by on crime, he does his thing, but like, he respects Batman in this very passionate sort of combative warrior's code kind of way. But even though he respects him and appreciates him and respects that he was in turn beaten by Batman, even though he broke him, he still knows that for his honor, he has to tear that guy in two next time he sees him.
Yeah.
Well, cause here's the thing, like, I guess this ties into the point of, you know, DC can't write great villain stuff. And I'm like, you know, we got Spider-Man, we got this, we got that, we got Magneto, for crying out loud, like, perfect villains or whatever. But then I'm like, you know, I'm looking at the thing over here and I'm like, huh, you know, we don't, Lex Luthor's kind of a problem, but why, like, why doesn't Green Lantern and Sinestro, the Flash, like, who's the main villain for the Flash? Like, who's the opposite of the Flash?
Flash
Slowpoke Rodriguez.
With Flash, it's a collective, it's the Rogues.
Yeah, the Rogues Gallery.
Like,
it's kind of like how Spider-Man has his own.
Well, Batman's got a Rogues Gallery, but
It's actually, there's actually a group called the Rogues.
Oh,
it's
Captain
Cold and
Captain Boomerang and the Trickster and
the Fire Fella. What's his name? If only Kay were here, she's like Flash fan number one.
Yeah, she's total Flash fan number one. Top, on and off.
Yeah, negligible. But basically, he has a whole
weather wizard.
He has a group of antagonists that just sort of hang out together and cause big problems. Mirror Master.
Mirror Master.
Man, he's a bastard. That guy. Oh, trouble.
So what about Slade versus Teen Titan?
Oh, well, yeah, there's another team rivalry dark.
That's one where it's, once again, it's a, I chose you.
Right.
Like, the teens did not go, let's go kick Deathstroke today. Slade went, well, I guess I'm going to go kill a bunch of teenagers today. And that's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Because he can't live with the insult. It's insulting.
Yeah.
On that note, similar to the Captain Hook, Peter Pan one, Van Pelt from Jumanji versus Alan Shepard.
Yeah, that's a good
Peter,
one.
Is it Peter or is it Alan Shepard? Is his name Alan? Yeah, Alan Shepard.
Alan Shepard.
It's like, not the astronaut, but the kid, the Robin Williams or whatever. Because he will stop at nothing
right.
to get that kid. Like, that's kind of scary, but cool in its own way.
And that look of fear in Alan's eyes.
As soon as he sees that, it's like,
once he realizes
it's like, a hunter from the darkest wild, and he gets up and it's like, you're like, what? I don't understand what's going on, but clearly he's scared. I'm scared. What's going to happen?
This was going on in Jumanji too. Yeah. Like, this is not just.
Right. Well, also the interesting thing to the parallel between Peter Pan, Captain Hook, Van Pelt was played by the actor who played his father.
Right, which happens in many theatrical versions of Peter Pan.
Most versions of Peter Pan. Yeah. with the exception of Hook, which also is Robin Williams. Like, you've seen, there's these weird parallels going on, I'm telling you, but it's, I don't know, it's pretty cool.
It's too bad there wasn't something like that in Zathura, but the Zathura movie was really good.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen it. I needed to see that.
Oh, yeah.
It's worth watching.
Yeah, guys, homework for this episode, watch Zathura, it's cool. It's Jumanji Bo space stuff, come on.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty vicious.
The book is also really awesome.
Yeah, the book is awesome. It's the book is way more Jumanji than the movie is.
Anyway. I love that basically we're just looking at the walls of Nerdy Show Studio looking for inspiration.
What can we do?
Well, because it's, you know, we're surrounded by it. It's like, it's...
So much pop culture. What about Snake Eyes and Snow, the other ninja?
Snake Eyes and White Guy?
Yeah.
Storm Shadow?
I don't know.
I don't... this is going to be embarrassing for us. Every G.I. Joe fan is going to be like, you guys, you don't... I'm sorry.
Excuse us for not being up to date on G.I. Joe mythos.
Up to date, like informed at all. Like the ninja... I feel like an asshole. The ninja battles are like the thing that people, the takeaway from G.I. Joe.
Right. Like one out of every.
You may as well just be like the, hey. What, the Lego Ninjago or whatever. It's like, you don't know about that either, do you?
G.I.
Well, Joe's, you know.
I don't know. G.I. Joe is
there's
on par
a big
with
difference between G.I. Joe and Ninjago, sir.
Let's put it this way. Like,
not just the size of the action figure, but the lore itself, sir.
Doug. G.I. Joe and Transformers, I mean, they were on the level. Like, that you were either buying one or the other, maybe both. And if it was both, then they were having action, you know, they were having adventures together.
It was neither. It was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Well, I think that's the problem with Team Nerdy Show is that we were like, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Ninja Turtles.
It's just the people in this room right now and on the web, because, I mean, the fact is we had Aaron in here.
Oh,
he would be
big G.I. Joe.
He would be giving us shit.
Is it Snowstorm? I don't know.
It's not Snow.
All I know is Snake Eyes.
Hey, man, if he's just butthurt over the movies tucking, I can understand. But,
you know. Hey, remember that one time that Shore Leave fell in love with a mermaid?
Anyone?
I do.
Yeah, that was...
It was
a sad episode. I'm sorry, G.I. Joe is the butt of internet memes. It's just like, G.I. Joe!
I'm a computer.
Hey, the Fensler...
Oh, push rock sandwiches!
I mean, no one can deny that the Fensler remixes are the greatest thing to happen to G.I. Joe in 20 years.
Yes.
But
movies included.
I think I'm wrong. Please. I'm remembering a fact. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, was he Cobra Commander in the first G.I. Joe movie?
What? I didn't see it. That sounds, that's crazy
so.
Talk to me.
Look it up.
I don't
I'm
think
tempted,
so.
I'm tempted to say
I think that's
Joseph
crazy talk.
Gordon-Levitt.
I don't think so.
Was Cobra Commander.
I know that...
Because I remember hearing who he was. I remember it's like, did you know Cobra Commander is played by so-and-so? And I was like, what? Are you kidding me?
I mean, I know that Eggleston played Destro. Oh, what about Doctor Who and the Daleks? Is that a rivalry?
I don't know if Doctor Who like hates them as much as they hate him.
Oh,
whatever,
he hates them.
I mean, I'm not up
on
Doctor
Who. I mean, because the whole thing is the Daleks... were the reason for the Time Wars, and they
you lost me.
And they destroyed the Time Lords.
Well, maybe like the Master is more his rival,
right? The Master definitely has a. I mean, well, the whole thing is the Master and him have the whole like Moriarty Sherlock Holmes mentality, but like I definitely feel like Doctor Who has he feels a responsibility to stop the Daleks whenever they pop up.
It's because they're crazy.
I've been working my way through Next Generation because I didn't grow up watching it, but I love it. It's great. I'm really digging it. But I'm like going. I'm halfway through season four. So if it ends up not being this and something different, you can, you know, I guess try not to spoil it. But what about Data and Lore? Would those be rivals?
Interesting.
Because there's a sibling rivalry
Lore
thing going on.
Lore sees it.
Yeah.
Lore definitely feels the rivalry, but I think
but Data doesn't trust him either.
Well,
Data doesn't trust him, but I don't think Data only ever wants to love Lore.
Like the whole thing about rivalry.
But every time Lore shows up, it's like we can't trust him. We have to just stop him. Like, you know, this isn't working.
Right, but that's from Data's point of view. Mm-hmm. That is from a completely empirical conclusion. Rivalry is so emotionally based. Like,
I guess that's true. There's an extra level of
it's always felt one-sided to me because Lore is all like, he's so emotional. He's just like, ha, ha, I'm gonna completely fuck you over, Data.
Right, right.
And Data's like, Lore, why are you doing this?
Right, it's true, it's true. But they are, I mean, like, I think you could almost make up for that by the fact that they're nearly identical. Like, right. they're made for each other.
I think it would be arguable, and I would, if I were a judge on this, I would let it slide. Mm-hmm. But I definitely feel
just like that most judges when it comes to anything data related, it's like, well, we'll let it slide. It's like, we're going to let it go. Yeah.
No, but I definitely feel like that emotional driven, mm-hmm. like either rage or respect is there. Mm-hmm. Because like, even with like Spider-Man, J. Jonah Jameson, J. Jonah has so much rage for Spider-Man.
Right.
And like you said, Spider-Man, that emotion is there.
Yeah.
Like, he still feels compassion for Jonah. Right.
But Jonah didn't do anything wrong, so he can't, like, you know, just bust right. his chops. Yeah, yeah.
So, but it's like, he, like, there, that is still a rivalry where it's still kind of like the animosity is one-sided. Mm-hmm. But there's still emotion from both sides. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to rule out the robot because he has
yeah,
no emotion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there's the lack of emotion from Skynet. But because right. of how
that's
much.
That's true.
Like but
clearly they go after, they single him
that's
out.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like the logical imperative for Skynet is number one priority.
John Connor, number one.
Yeah. If Data had that same number one priority, right. we must be stopping Lore.
Right, right.
And I mean, if you want, of course, I feel like the only substantial rivalry in Next Generation that has a long lasting appeal is, it's pretty, I mean, it's kind of, it's pretty obvious. It's Q and Picard.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. At first, Picard's like, yeah, whatever. I just leave
stop
me alone.
With me.
And then eventually it's
I haven't gotten as far yet for it to be like a true rivalry. Because so right now where I'm at, it's still just like, oh, Picard, hey, I'm just going to dick around. He's like, you get off my ship. You know, like, that's pretty much it. It doesn't quite get to the extreme.
Basically, it amounts to piss each other off enough. And eventually you just get angry every time you see him.
I'm already angry every time I see him. I'm like, every time it's just like, I'm flipping through the list. And like the letter Q shows up in one of the titles. I'm like, oh, God damn it. Gotta watch this one. I'm gonna put it off. I'll watch it tomorrow. God damn it. And sure enough, he shows up and he's naked. And it's just like, oh, great. Hate him. Now he's naked in my face. The Adventure Time poster made me think Finn and Jake, Ice King.
True. Man, the relationship with him is so weird these days.
It is.
I mean,
I'm still catching
up.
Because it's cordial, even.
There's so many layers to Ice King. He's like an onion. You keep going deeper and you keep getting sadder and crying,
but that's the thing.
More.
You don't really
the
have
more
to
you go inside of it. It's like, ugh.
They don't have to hate him, though, to be the rival.
Season 1 and 2, they're more rivals. And then later on, they're kind of like that crazy uncle that they have to love because he's crazy.
But they also, like, I still feel that, like, the moment he was up to no good, they would just.
Oh yeah,
they
smack him. Yeah,
yeah.
Like, no, Ice King, you stop that.
Like, it's like a child misbehaving. In
like,
that point,
there's that part of a rivalry is still hoping. Like, there's so emotion in it because you're hoping for the rehabilitation.
Yeah,
well, like that's what I definitely feel with Batman.
Might be,
and
like
Joker.
Some like crazy rivalry between like Princess Bubblegum and Marceline. You know, like how that goes.
That's kind of a rivalry. Yeah, a little bit.
I think they just have a very complicated relationship. Question mark. Those ladies are complicated together.
I think the lesson we need to take away from all this is that Glampire needs to hate the Lightning.
he starts off
he's
with
like,
they are a nuisance.
They
like,
yeah,
oh,
a
look,
nuisance.
Toys to play with. Yeah. And then they just fuck him over and over. Like, okay, well, number one priority. We need to stop these fucking Lightning Dogs.
Look at this his way. He accidentally started a war that destroyed the planet, and he needed that technology to get off this rock. So now he's trapped in this rock. And he's thinking
they're the only way out.
Like
thousands of years.
It's been years and years, and he thought, "Well, I fucked up. Like, I'm gonna have to scour this world for resources. There's no way I'm gonna pull this off. Maybe
forever,
I can."
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's just like,
right,
"Oh, we've got it." And it's like, he's like, "Fuck, these dog things have it. I'm gonna get it. It's gonna be great. Let's do it." And they're like, no, fuck you. We don't even want to go home. We want to defeat you so bad. Boom, it's gone. He's like, you mom
don't know what you've done.
Oh, man. I like it.
It's bad news. And, you know, whether or not they get individual rivals, well, you know, we'll see.
Time
which,
will tell.
Which villains are going to rub them the wrong way. But
this has been actually a fun exercise in just like analyzing rivalry and just antagonism. And I definitely feel that emotion because like just going back to like even the quote unquote goofiest example of Francis and Pee-wee.
Mm-hmm. It's a straight up rivalry though. Like it's
the,
funny, but it
so
is
so much emotion.
Yeah, yeah.
There's the rivalry where you're hoping where they one side is hoping for rehabilitation.
I just want to see more scenes with them together.
Like Sherlock is hoping Moriarty will reform. Mm-hmm. Batman is hoping.
Pee-wee doesn't give a shit about Francis.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, that's the thing. Doesn't want him to get then better.
There are the rivalries. He wants to
rub it and rub the bike in his face.
There are the rivalries of story. I will destroy you.
Yeah.
I will end you.
Yeah.
That's kind of the same rivalry you see with Seinfeld and Newman.
Yeah.
There will never be reconciliation.
Like, there's tragic rivalries, and then there's the rivalries that you as the audience love to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I just remember another one. Scrooge McDuck and Glumgold. Like, those two motherfuckers. That is, once again,
That's another classic rivalry.
They will never unhate each other.
They embody the archetypes of people who have a shared history, shared romance, shared goals, and they hate each other.
Yeah, and that will never reconcile.
You know, what's interesting about them is that neither of them are especially good people.
Yeah.
You know, Scrooge is he's more lighthearted, and Glumgold's business practices leave much to be desired, but so does Scrooge. He's a very shrewd businessman.
Right. I mean, he's really the only, he's only in Hero because we're seeing his point of view.
Would Neve Campbell versus Ghostface in the Scream movies?
I guess so.
Eventually. Unfortunately, once it gets to that point, it's the movies get real bad, but not they were ever really good to begin with. But
just the idea that, like,
Scream 3 sucks is what I'm saying.
Whoever puts on that mask is always gunning for her.
But I hadn't thought of like long running like horror movies, films, like Jamie Lee Curtis's character.
Well, but even in the Halloween series, it's not always after her.
He is.
Yeah,
like Halloween 3, which is fucking
Halloween 3.
I know, but I'm just saying, in the forerunner of the franchise, not every movie's about Jamie Lee Curtis.
Well, if in a perfect world, the franchise I'm personally a fan of what John Carpenter was attempting with Halloween 3. Mm-hmm. I wish that the series had gone on to be a different problem every time, but I know how it's completely not marketable, I understand why it happened. For Michael Myers, he is compelled to murder his family. And Jamie Lee Curtis is the last notch in his belt that he needs to do away with. So,
and she needs to stop him.
Like, yeah,
her brother, it is her responsibility.
In Halloween 2, they do in fact become rivals. I mean, of course, then you know, Halloween 4 through 6, it becomes her child becomes the subject of all the attention. Hmm. But you can either choose to accept those films or not. Because then once you get to H2O, one of the most unfortunately titled films of all time, End of the 20th Century Marketing is the most nonsense shit I've ever seen. it's not a great film, but that rivalry from Halloween 2 is in full effect. She is just like, I'm done with this shit. I don't know how you found me. It is over, pal.
Like Sigourney Weaver in Aliens?
Yeah. It is a very similar situation.
That's how I feel with the responsibility that the doctor feels against the Daleks. Mm-hmm. Is Sigourney Weaver's character, like Ripley, it is her responsibility to make sure that these motherfuckers never make it to Earth. Mm-hmm. That she feels a personal responsibility at that point.
I'm just not as familiar with Doctor Who, but I just cannot picture Doctor Who
beautiful.
With the sonic screwdriver just saying, get away from her, you bitch. Like, I can't see that happening with that much passion and intensity that Sigourney Weaver had in the forklift.
Well, I think that's the, you know, whether or not they want you to think in Doctor Who that that's the kind of conflict they have, but whether or not Doctor Who is capable of channeling that level of emotion is a completely different argument altogether.
I got a lot of mixed feelings about Doctor Who.
Yeah, you and me both, pal.
Well, I think that the Ninth Doctor probably could have done, but none of those other ones, they're all too sissy.
Did John suddenly get drunk?
No. That's the thing. That's one of the things I don't like about Doctor Who is just like, oh, well, you know, 1 through 9, you know, you kind of got it. Well, once you're past 9 years, basically, of Doctor Who, well, not even 9 years. What am I talking about? That's 9 seasons. Yeah. 9 Doctors. That's like, 15 years of whatever. Then it starts 15? Getting good.
Well, the Ninth Doctor was when they came back. Anyway, but we're not here.
We do actually have a microsode about Doctor Who on the docket, so we
gotta get me on that one because I'm just gonna complain the whole time.
So, what about McFly versus Tannen?
I was actually gonna bring that up. Yeah, McFly and Tannen.
That's also a generational.
Yeah,
yeah, because it's always like the Tannen family versus the McFlys. Like even just throughout all of the films and even into the video game, they explore that it's not always Marty that he's after secretly, but like literally every member of the McFly family is being picked on by the Tannens and
forever.
Yeah, forever. And it's great. Even the cartoon. I think even the freaking cartoon explored that even further.
There was always a Biff. Yeah. You know, in ancient Rome,
Ancient Rome Biff.
Yeah. It's that show's not good.
No, but the game, the video game is fantastic. Like, as a fan of the movies. But
we put chocolate syrup in your shower cap, and now you don't have a brain left.
What?
I honestly think John got drunk. That was the
premise of one of the episodes.
Oh, man, you remember shit?
You remember that stuff? The only thing I remember about that...
Okay, I mean, think about this. I have a fucking laboratory with several death lasers.
Brag. I'm Emmett Brown Jr. Brag.
How do we feel about Wolverine and Sabretooth? Is that a...
Oh, my God, yeah. Okay. Well, and what's more, Wolverine's... Wolverine's rival central, right?
Yeah.
Like, Wolverine is just... He's just...
He's even got members of the X-Men who are pretty much rivals to him.
Like, hell, him and Scott.
But him and Scott is the frenemy rival. Him and Sabretooth is the bloodlust rival.
Yeah.
And then he's got even a rivalry with his own... we thought, well, maybe Sabretooth is his brother, but his own actual brother... No, Dawkins' son.
Yeah.
His own brother, Dog. And that's a whole thing. I mean, you know Dog came back, right? Jason Aaron wrote him...
Bounty Hunter?
No.
I don't know what you're talking about.
When Wolverine Origin... you find out that the Wolverine has a brother. In Wolverine Origin, does this weird thing where you think, "Oh, this burly kid's gonna end up being, you know,
Sabretooth."
He's gonna end up being Sabretooth. At first, you think he's gonna end up being Wolverine, and then at the end of the first issue, you're like, "Oh no, Wolverine's the scrawny kid. Wolverine's the little emaciated kid." Okay, weird. So then he's got this brother, and the brother never showed up again until recently, where he was caught in a bit of an Ouroboros situation where himself from the future came back in time, was all like, "Hey, how about you go, like, you've been hunting for your damn brother, you beat him up, right? Okay, well, let's make this happen, and here's all this stuff." And a bunch of time travel problems, and now Dog's working for the Hellfire Club with all those awful smart kids who were bringing Sentinels back and all that jazz.
Oh, yay.
Yeah. Wolverine the X-Men's a good book. Crazy stuff happens in it.
But yeah, Wolverine rival central is the best way to put that.
So here's a kind of bit of a stretch one. Ghostbusters first Shandor. Because he's always ultimately responsible for most of the problems that the Ghostbusters have to deal with. Him and his little cult.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you count the video game as canon, which most people do, and most people probably should, it ultimately was him.
Fantastic.
Yeah, no, it was. I agree. And I don't want to say retcon, but they even make reference to the fact that Viggo in the second film with the slime under the city, that was all due to Shandor's technology on this hidden island. So really, rivalry would suggest like an active something working against it, whereas Shandor was long since dead, and these things were working long after he was dead. So,
did they end up eventually fighting Shandor? Yes.
Like a ghost, yes. But it's not like Shandor was like, "I'm out to beat the Ghostbusters." Right. Like, it was very much now, like just doing his own thing.
Now, Filmation's sort of Ghostbusters,
though, because it's a rivalry where one of the people's actually missing. It's like you're literally fighting their ghost, even when you aren't actually fighting their ghost. You know what I mean?
No, it's true. It's true.
It's curious.
Yeah, it's kind of like the how. In The Fifth Element, Gary Oldman and Bruce Willis are like, you know, the rivals, but they don't even know each other exist.
Yeah.
Which I think is brilliant. Like, I love that. They're like, they're fighting against everyone. They have, like, literally, they don't even know the other person's name. He doesn't even know there's a taxi driver out there. He has no clue as to what's going on, but he's just actively working against them the entire time. I think it's kind of unique, but pretty cool.
Okay, so we got to wrap this, but, thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks to Big Bad Shadow Man for requesting this microsode. If you want a microsode, all you got to do is support us. And if you pass the $100 mark in our cumulative total, any of the $100, you will earn yourself a microsode. And of course, any support gives you perks in the mail. So what do you have for us, Hex? What is going to take us out of this episode?
Well, we mentioned him really early on, but he's also still a pretty iconic member of our rivalry family, Ahab.
Sure.
By MC Lars.
Okay.
Where he basically breaks down rhythmically why Ahab is pretty amazing as a rival person.
Let's do it, man.
Boom.
Thanks so much for listening. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Hex.
Bye, I'm Doug.
Bye, I'm Kristen.
Bye, I'm John.
Call me Ahab, what? Monomaniac, obsessed with success unlike Steve Wozniak.
On the hunt for this mammal that once took my leg, with my worn down crew and my man Queequeg.
You're never gonna find him.
He's a big sperm whale.
The ocean is enormous.
Shut up, we're setting sail. This scar that you see that runs down my face has scarred my soul and inspired this chase. Mental sickness has got me on the run. Full speed ahead, this is American fun. There is wisdom that is woe, so welcome to my life. It was fine until Moby scarred me like a knife. Towards thee I sail, that unconquering whale, to stab my spear into your white tail. The first one to spot him gets his gold doubloon. Now excuse me while I go be melancholy in my room. Bad trip, thanks to Moby Dick. Peg leg, sperm whale, jawbone, what? Whale crash, so fast. Oh no, oh no. The ship's got a hole, plug it up, plug it up.
We're never gonna find this white whale, are we, Captain?
Hey Ishmael, can I call you annoying? Grown up beluga in the deep blue sea, swim so fast and swim so free. With the heaven above, Moby Dick stressing me, and this crazy drenched crew below. Call it idiotic pride, or call me Oedipus, my main tragic flaw.
But what about us?
It's your battle too, crew, man versus beast. At least have respect as we sail south and east and north and west. Look, I'm doing my best. While the rain keeps pouring, we're exhausted and stressed. Pimp went insane when he almost drowned. So profound when he shrieks like a little sailor clown. Random ships we met warned us of our doom. They said our boat would be our tomb. Near the Mariana Trench, deep in Oceanic, we spotted Moby Dick, so white and titanic. Bad trip, thanks to Moby Dick. Peg leg, sperm whale, jawbone, what? Whale crash, so fast. Oh no, oh no. The ship's got a hole, plug it up, plug it up. Bad trip, thanks to Moby Dick.
My leg, and for that you must die. I threw my spear and hit Moby in the eye. He charged the boat, it began to sink. I said, how about that? Hubris really stinks. I didn't think that it would end like this. Pride meant fate, this captain got dissed. Let it be a lesson, revenge is never sweet. So I stomped my peg to the super grass beat. That's it, thanks to Moby Dick. Peg leg, sperm whale, jawbone, what? Whale crash, so fast. Oh no, oh no, the ship's got a hole, plug it up, plug it up. That's it, thanks to Moby Dick. Peg leg, sperm whale, jawbone, what? Whale crash, so fast. Oh no, oh no, the ship's got a hole, plug it up, plug it up.
Thanks for listening to Nerdy Show. Nerdy Show is made possible by A Comic Shop, Nerdapalooza, and the generous support of listeners like you.
Genital support.
Oh, come on now. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend, rating and reviewing us on the iTunes, or making a contribution in our monthly support drive.
I've got no money.
Well, chill out, man. Any size contribution gets you Nerdy Show audio and images, like even a buck, and it lets you participate in our monthly support drives. Just go to nerdyshow.com and click the support page to chip in. It's easy.
I wait outside 7-Eleven long enough, I'll get you a dollar.
Hey, that's, you know, whatever
works.
It'll
be in quarters, but that's all they're going to give me for the bus.
Well, look, for more episodes of Nerdy Show, as well as other fine programming, community forums, videos, articles, and more, you should head over to nerdyshow.com. And you can subscribe to all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via the iTunes Store. For the latest news, follow us on all your favorite social networks.
Okay.
And you're listening to another Nerdy Show Microshow. Microshowed?
Microshowed.
Is this one about Sean Carson? You're listening to a microshowed.
And you're listening to another Nerdy Show Microsode. That's a show that is dick the shit.
Dipping your dick in it.
That is a show with a big old dick in it. ain't nothing micro about that. 3, 2, 1.